Welcome to another edition of Love Vocals Nation, where we delve into the lives and experiences of vocalists who have left an indelible mark on the music industry. Our very special guest today is known far and wide as The Voice. And after making some of the biggest and best international dance anthems of the last decade, including four official top 40 UK hits, including Freemasons, Free Your Mind, and Avicii, Seek Bromance, gaining a sensational number one in the dance charts and garnering over 70 million views on YouTube. Her rise to success has been nothing short of extraordinary. Not only a vocalist and dance music superstar, the amazing artist is also a successful songwriter. We welcome today none other than the amazing Amanda Wilson.
Woo! Welcome, Amanda. So good to have you here. How are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you. Yeah, I'm good. It's cold today. I feel cold.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's actually I've been really wearing, like, nice weather here.
I'm like freezing. I'm like, right, I'll get the hoodie on.
Yeah, I'm back with the winter clothes again.
Yeah. You know what the UK's like? It just can't make up its mind.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same in Ireland. You know, one day it's like sunny, and they, you know what? They said it's going to be 24 degrees. I don't believe it. It's probably going to be 10.
Four, you know? Yeah, we have four seasons in a day.
Yeah. That's it.
Well, I'm going to make you really jealous and say that it's 32 degrees here.
Oh,
although I'm sick, and I know
you're sitting in a hoodie.
I know. What the heck's that all about? Come on.
What is that?
Just showing off our, you know.
Oh, the gear, of course.
I like it.
The merch. That's So, Amanda, we're super excited to have you here. And I must admit, I'm a little bit starstruck because when I was 20, I used to have MTV on in the background all the time. And your hits started to come all the time. I was like, wow, what is this? And then I heard, like, Seek Bromance. Mm-hmm. And I stopped in front of the TV and I had to look. I was like, whoa, who is this amazing singer? I really want to be like her one day. Aww. And years later, here we're sitting and chatting. So we're just so thrilled to have you here with us.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Yeah. You've been a huge inspiration.
There you go.
Oh, thanks. You know, I don't think of it like that when I'm, you know, singing and doing music. I don't think actually when I get messages from people and they're like, I was going for a breakup at that time and that song really helped me through it. And I think it's little things like that, you know, even if it's just one person, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
It's such a difference, doesn't it? It's like therapy. Music is therapy. You know, so.
Yeah. 100%. So my first question to you, Amanda, is who is Amanda Wilson?
Well, God, that's a really good question. Amanda Wilson of late has changed her style a little bit. So I'm doing a bit more 80s synth stuff, which hasn't been released yet. But I'm known in the industry as EDM. I do electronic dance music, but I love piano house. And if I like the record, I'll record it. It's not really, I don't know, I've just been known as this dance singer, but actually I sing all different kinds, but the ones that are like sort of well known. I'm lots of things. I'm a mother, I'm a pain in the ass, I'm loads of things. So I don't think about it, to be honest. I don't really have an ego with it.
I love that.
Yeah.
So how did you get started in the music industry? Tell us the story behind. Yeah.
Well, I was quite late to sort of singing. I started singing about 12 and I started doing, so from about 16, I started doing session singing. And that's basically, for people that don't know, I just go to a studio, record a song for somebody to pitch to another artist. So it might be that they wrote a song for Celine Dion and they want somebody to sing it of a particular standard in order to pitch it to labels.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I started doing that, and I was doing that for X amount of years in between my normal daytime job. And then I met Freemasons. It's just really weird. I was working with some guys in Bromley. I recorded a song with them. They sent it to Loaded Records, which was Freemasons' label at the time, and they said, we don't really like the song, but we really like the singer. Can we have her details?
Wow.
Yes.
That's great.
Love it.
But then I went to Brighton and I recorded Love on My Mind.
Yeah.
And then And then nothing happened for about 9 months. I thought it was just another session. You know, I do plenty of them and just forget about it. That's the best thing to do in the music industry, is just sing it, you know, sing it and just forget about it, because whatever's going to happen is going to happen with it. Yeah. And then I got a call from the label that, oh, it's C-listed on Radio 1. And I was like, wow. And then it eventually went up to A-list. And then
wow. They
were like, do you want to do a video? We're going to do a video. You know, I was in Ibiza, like doing Cafe Mamba. It was really
amazing.
Yeah, it was really, it was quite scary at the time, really, because I'd gone from like this 9-5 job, going to the gym, going home, you know, chilling out, you know, going to bed by 9. And then in a matter of like a month, I'd gone from that, giving up my job, to like doing video shoots. It was such a surreal experience.
Wow.
My mum was just coming with me to every single gig. And
Did she?
Yeah.
Oh my God, so cool.
I love that.
Yeah, she loved it. She was like my little roadie. She was just like, yeah, she's cool.
So all of the kind of session singing kind of led up to meeting the Freemasons. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. So what made you become a singer? I mean, what brought you to that place where you decided that you just wanted to be a vocalist, writer?
This is a story I told my friend the other day, actually. In the News of the World, they used to have a magazine in there, and you could buy 5 CDs for £40. I mean, you guys might be too, you know, young to, you know what this, you know, but
we know about the CDs and all that.
Yeah, you used to get 5 CDs for £40. And so I wrote a little slip out. I hope I'm not going to get done for this. As Mr. Wilson. And I got Lionel Richie, Mariah Carey, Prince. I got like Dirty Dancing album. So I got them all delivered. Obviously didn't pay for it. Because that was Mr. Wilson. There was no Mr. Wilson in the house. So then I started playing this Mariah Carey one, and I was like, oh, I like this girl. And I started singing, and then I thought, well, maybe I can sing. And then it all went from there, really. And I started copying her, like listening to every single song and watching her on TV and stuff, because obviously we didn't have YouTube back in that day. So, you know, I just studied her, and I started almost copying what she was doing. Wow. And then over the years, I developed my own style, but I still love her to bits, you know. I think she's
I saw her in a concert, like, just some year ago, and I started to cry. Like, it was, like, unreal. Like, when she took, I was like, there's no way she's going to take those high tones. Yeah. She did it live. And I was like,
still do the whistle, can't you?
Like, yeah, it's crazy.
I can't do that. I cannot do that. I've tried. It just sounds like.
So your voice has been on, like, you've been in various genres of music, including, you know, like house and pop, and EDM. How do you adapt your vocal style and approach when you're working on different types of music?
I think it depends who I'm working with at the time. Some people want to like push me a little bit to sound a little bit different, but I think I mainly just go with the flow of the record, and usually you know how to approach it. Sometimes I get ideas from other people, and they say, have you thought about doing it this way? And then that's what makes me kind of come across a little bit differently as an artist. But mainly on every song, you know it's me. You go, that's me. You know, like, people know it's me. So I'm not usually too different. And I'm all for, like, just going with the flow and just, you know, whatever comes out, that's how it's supposed to sound, really. Mm. Yeah.
Which genre do you prefer?
Oh, God. I'm really into, like, 80s synth and
is pop. That
the pop stuff. I love EDM, but I don't get that many good tracks for EDM anymore. I don't. Mm. Yeah.
You need to change that.
Yeah.
Listen up, producers. This is the Mariah Carey of EDM. Like, you need to give her some good demos here.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Can I ask you this question? Because it's something that jumps into my mind often. Is like back in the 90s, there was like phenomenal bands. There was phenomenal production teams, and it feels like, and maybe it's just me being older, I don't know, but it feels like a lot of things sound the same these days.
Yeah, it does.
Do you find that?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I don't like songs as much as I used to. I'm still listening to all old stuff. I don't. Yeah. Some new stuff does come through and it's great, but there's so much of it and it's so.
I agree. Yeah.
It's so fragmented now. There's no. Yeah, I don't know.
Much.
Yeah, it's. It's hard to find good songs because there's so many of them, and you don't need to be at the top of the chart in order to have a hit anymore. It's all changed.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to be on TikTok. Fucking hate TikTok. Sorry, I shouldn't say that.
I'm not a huge fan either, to be honest.
Every time I go on it, I just think, because my son, he wants to go on it. I said, he's not allowed TikTok. He's only 8. I'm not allowed him to go on TikTok. It's just, I don't know. I just don't like, you just waste your life on it, you know. And even me putting videos up and trying to do, because I have to promote myself, obviously. I can't do it. I've lost touch with that.
Yeah,
technology side of things.
I get you. You're not alone on that.
I think for me certainly, it just seems like it's lost that wow factor. Mm. I just remember back in the day, stuff would come out and you go, oh my god, that thing. That I don't get that anymore. Well, rarely get that.
No, I don't either. I don't get it. And everyone we know and love is unfortunately dying or dead. All them iconic artists, including Tina Turner. I mean, that was really
it's
so sad. All the people we grew up listening to, you know. But I tell you, I did do a gig last August, and I've never done this. It's a festival called Reminisce, and it's I can't remember what it was now, but I got to meet Five, Wigfield, Angie Pratt. I got to meet all these 90s and like 2000, and I loved
Amazing.
It. It was so good, honestly. It was really good, and it was nice to share the stage room because they're who I was listening to growing up, you know.
Yeah, I do miss like being in a CD store, just like looking at just a single, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like they made like a little artwork for it and
all the lyrics,
held it, and you read through like the whole thing and you're like, oh my god, I can't wait till I get home to play this over and over and over again until you could, like, until your mom like throw it out because it's enough, you know.
Yeah, no.
I miss that feeling, you know.
I miss that too. Yeah, I do. I took my son into HMV and it was like, wow, he's like, he's never seen this before. And I'm like, this is the CDs and the DVDs and all that. And he was amazed. I think kids have missed out, you know, the kids of his generation anyway.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for him because music's like disposable now. I mean, he's lucky to listen to 10 seconds before he listens to something else. Whereas, as you said, we played it to death. Like, we know every word, every lyric,
And they became part of our kind of day-to-day lives, and you could talk to your friends about it and go, oh, isn't that an amazing track? Let's get the album.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. None of that. Yeah.
No, I don't feel
that. It's so sad.
It is.
You need to bring that back.
Yeah, it'd be lovely to bring it back. It would. I mean, vinyl does try and make a comeback, doesn't it? When I would like to release an album towards the end of this year, if not next year, and I definitely am going to do some vinyl and some
I've got a
physical copy in my hand.
Yes.
even if it's just me that holds it.
I miss that. I've got all my vinyl still and I love it. I won't get rid of that. I love it.
That's awesome. So super excited for that. So in addition to your work as a vocalist, you also have written songs for other artists, right?
I don't really write songs for other people anymore. I just write songs for me. And that's mainly because of time. You know, I used to, before, you know, I had my son, I used to be either and everywhere doing like songwriting parties, but my time's really precious now. So most of the time I'm writing stuff for me that I do have. Yeah. I work with a lot of different record companies doing library music as well.
Yeah.
Where like stuff for TV and video games and films and whatever. And the good thing about that is that it doesn't have to be typical Amanda Wilson. I do have to kind of think outside the box.
Right. Okay.
Because otherwise, you know, when you're thinking about advertising, the lyrics have to be a specific way. It has to be, you know, if you've been given a brief, it has to follow that brief, you know, so I can't just start on a tangent and do anything. That I do really enjoy, and that is kind of what pays the bills, I suppose. Record sales, I don't earn anything from record sales anymore.
Isn't that bizarre? We're going to come to that later on in this interview, but I mean, that's a really big topic. for a lot of vocalists and writers.
Exactly.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'm curious, are you signed to any publisher?
No.
No.
So you're copyright control.
I work with all different record companies, and like, so I work with Universal or BMG, and I don't think I will ever sign a publishing deal with one company again.
Why?
I've signed publishing deals before and nothing happens. And you get money at the beginning, you're like, oh, I like this money. But now I've got to think of the bigger picture, you know. And you don't get, like, I mean, I know I wouldn't get it probably unless I had a massive, massive hit. You know, the deals of like 50 grand or 100 grand, you know, unless you're Rihanna.
Bygone days.
I don't even think Rihanna writes music. I don't know if she actually writes her own song. So, but like, people like Mariah Carey could get that kind of money, and if not, obviously loads more. But I don't think I could sign to one publishing company, not at the moment, because I'd be too frightened to, in case if it don't work out with them, I'm tied in for 10 years and I've done it. So, and they were, it was a good publishing company that I was with. But I just don't think I'd do it now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you think if other vocalists are thinking about, you know, signing to any publisher, what should they think about then? What should they take in consideration?
Always get a lawyer. Always get a lawyer, because I've made that mistake before where I'm like, I can't really afford one. Maybe I'll just sign it and just, you know, a publishing deal for a long time. Sometimes they write stuff in it which is for a lifetime, which I don't think that should, you know, like, it's got no expiration date. Like, you just got to look for things like that.
Yeah.
And you just got to make sure that the percentages are fair and that they uphold their side of it. But you definitely need a lawyer for that.
Mm-hmm. You
know? I have got a couple of contacts, so if anybody is listening, I could direct them that way. The ones that don't cost a fortune, you know.
Yeah.
It's really handy to know. That's a great thing.
It is. I've got a couple of people,
So if anyone's listening to this and want to be pointed in the right direction, they can contact us and we'll pass their details on to Amanda.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Yeah,
I love that you're talking about publishing. I'm interested, if you don't mind me asking, and you don't need to answer this, but how many publishing deals have you had in your career?
I've had two.
And for kind of like 10 years, is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, roughly that. Yeah,
right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What were the pitfalls in those, having to, you know, do that full 10-year stint? What was the pitfalls for you?
Well, the good thing is on the second one, I actually recouped the money that was advanced to me. So I was seeing money coming through, but the advance wasn't ridiculous, which I'm not crazy about. Like, it doesn't have to be a massive advance, because you, at the end of the day, you have to pay that money
back.
It's not So if you get 20, 30 grand, you ain't going to see money for X amount of time until you've obviously earned enough money. And the pitfalls is obviously if you get approached by another record company, you want to sign that half of the publishing, you can't.
Right,
you can't, because everything's got to go through that publishing company. There are I suppose publishing deals where you can sign a certain amount of songs that you've done to them, but it's not an exclusive deal. Right, but most people do want you exclusively.
And certainly these days they do, they want everything today.
What do you think is better than like there, sometimes as a vocalist, singer, or even musicians, there are some labels that, let's say, they want to sign some songs with you, and they want to do a publishing deals like just for that specific song. Is that better than having 10-year contract, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, the 10-year, I mean, their contract would still last over 10 years because they need to earn money on that record. And it might be that the contract with those songs ends in 10 years, but then they earn money on it for another X amount of years. But at least then it's only for those songs, and you can go off and work with other companies.
Other companies.
Exclusive, you know. Yeah. I just think exclusive is just...
Well, it's the all of everything, isn't it? And as you say, if you don't recoup, then that track's stuck there until you.
And if they're not actively getting you on to work with people and getting you in with people, then what are you going to do? Because you can't go off and work with whoever else. Right. You can, mm-hmm. but you have to sign it to this record company, you know.
Right.
They have to be really active in trying to get you to recoup that money they've given you, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, I think this is a kind of topic that we're going to be tackling on its own in sort of other podcasts. But I think that, and this is just my opinion, that unless, as you say, you're getting a really large amount of money and you've got a really good lawyer and you cut a really good deal and mm-hmm. you don't feel that you're completely stuck in that, I just, these days, I just don't see the point unless they're an enormously proactive publisher.
Definitely.
And getting you tons and tons and tons of, you know, collabs that you can potentially
hit. And if you're an artist signed to them as well, it makes sense to do it in-house. Yeah. But if you're releasing one song assignments or anything, but you're exclusive, I don't see the point in doing it. But, you know, but if you're like an artist, you know, with whoever, and they say, right, we're going to sign you as a brand and we're going to, we want your pub, understandably, they're going to want your publishing. And that's fair enough because they're investing in you as the brand, as the artist, as the brand.
Yeah.
But if it was just somebody that approached saying, really like your songs, I'd like to sign you as a publisher, sign you as a writer. I don't think I could do it.
Right. Okay. What do you think? So this is the last question on this one. But so many, especially in the EDM sector, there's so many labels that are signing artists publishing with no advances.
Yeah.
In perpetuity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it just astonishes me. And I think a lot of artists go into that in just out of not being educated. And you know, so what would you say to them on that topic?
Well, I wasn't educated and I'm still no expert, but for the first, like, I'd say 15 years of my career, I was not educated on it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's only been burnt if I learned the hard way, and I have learned the hard way. That I've learned to read between the lines and look at every contract to make sure I do get legal advice. But I can understand contracts. I can understand the jargon a little bit now.
Okay.
You know, what's written and stuff like that.
And that's one of the things that we really, really want to do is help educate people to be mindful about what they're signing away. Because ultimately, this is our craft. And back in the day, we used to say, this is your pension.
Yeah.
Okay. So that makes publishing even more important to be mindful of just signing away. But we're going to do a much broader focus on this and bring in some media lawyers from both the States and from the UK. And we can talk about this more.
I need it to be easy, understandable, digestible. But when you look at a legal contract, you're like, what the fuck is that? I don't, you know, you're reading like, and it's, you need somebody who's going to say, well, when you see this, this is what it means. Cause it is like another language to me.
And they do that deliberately. They do
Of course they do. They want it to be like difficult to understand.
We're going to pay you, but it's got to be on a Tuesday between 3 and 4 PM, but the weather's got to be the right condition. You know, like insurance
company.
Exactly. Exactly. And also as a side note, this is one of the things we did with the VSA is that we actually created a standard contract and we took it piece by piece. We took every pitfall we could find for vocalist songwriters and we made it's out there so people can have it for free. Everybody that's listening, if you want a copy of this contract, you can get it for free. And we've had it looked over by lawyers. Everyone's gone thumbs up on it. So there you go.
Right, that's really good. I'll have a copy of that, please, if you don't mind.
No problem. Coming at you.
We'll fix it.
Okay. What was the first song that really changed your life? You were saying, I think, before that it was that moment when you met the Freemasons. Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, because the year before that, Lola's Theme was out, and it was which I absolutely loved the brass. You know, like that old disco kind of feel, and then Love My Mind is—it's not the same, but it's
got this similar energy.
It's
got
that similar thing to it. So I was like, "Wow, this is great! It's really good." So when I sang it, I thought, "I really love this. It's really good." And they pitched the vocals down, obviously, because the chorus a lot of people don't know this, but the chorus is actually the original vocalist Jackie Moore in the chorus.
No way. Oh, and did I not know the verses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, so they pitched my vocals down in the verses to kind of sound along the same. She's quite a deeper.
Okay. Because I remember listening to that song, I was like, wow, she can really change her voice and like going more deep, you know. It's so interesting to hear the story.
Yeah. But you've got a 4-octave range, so you can get down.
Yeah. It's just people do that now. They didn't do it much back then. They do it now all the time. Mm. They pitch the vocals down and slow them down, and you know, they do all sorts of stuff now. So yeah, I think when I sing it live, it does still sound. No one's ever gone, that sounds different.
Yeah.
So when I sing it live, I think I still sound the same. So
okay.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. I'm not frauding people.
I was going to say that we also you were part of the writing team, weren't you, on that track? Is that the case?
No, I never wrote that track.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. No, that Love on My Mind track is half a Jackie Moore song and half a Tina Turner song.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Cut and shut. How about that?
So it is pretty much like that. So When the Heartache Is Over, I Know I Won't Be Missing You.
Yeah.
Tina Turner's When the Heartache Is Over song.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. And I've Got Love on My Mind is Jackie Moore's This Time Baby, which was released in 1960 something, I think.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so I have a question.
That's
then
amazing. Well, it's fantastic.
These are like legendary songs that you basically were able to play around with and do something really creative with.
Mm-hmm.
For that song, and became like such a major hit, first of all. But did you have to go to, like, say, Tina Turner's management to ask permission, or do you know how that process looked like?
No, do you know what? I don't actually know what happened in that sense, because it's not a straight cover, it's an adaptation, because there's two different records and they're coming together. So I would assume that Freemasons didn't get any publishing. I would be very surprised if they did, but I actually don't know. They might have got a little bit, but yeah, they're two massive records, you see. So
they're going to want at least 50% each,
aren't they? So that's 100 gone. That's it. No, so that I don't sense. Actually know. Yeah, I don't know, but. Yeah, it's interesting actually, because the other day I found out When the Heartache Is Over, that the Tina Turner track is written by the guy who, the Nightcrawlers guy, Push the Feeling On.
Oh, wow.
It's written by him. Because he put in his post, oh, Tina Turner, you know, I'm so privileged that I got to write a song for her. And I was like, really? And then it was like, When the Heartache Is Over. So I was like, oh.
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing. And that then sheds light on why we noted that there was 6 different writers on the credits. Okay, that makes
sense.
Still more
than now there's about 20 on a song. And I'm like,
wow, really?
Tons on a song. With Seek Romance, there's tons of writers on that song.
So we noticed there were 6 songwriters at least on Seek Romance. Mm-hmm. Was everyone in the same room at the same time when you wrote that song, or how was that process?
This is a really, really long story that I'm going to try and shorten for you, because a lot of people don't know this. I did actually mention it in an interview that I'd done a couple of months ago. So The Love You Seek was written with about 6 or 7 people. I flew over to Italy to record it, changed a few of the lyrics, recorded it, took some publishing on it. So I wasn't in the room when they wrote the song, but I went in to adapt a few of the lyrics. Yeah. Right. So then we'd all split our publishing splits. I'd got my publishing splits. And then the vocal from Love You Seek got put on Tim Berg, a.k.a. Avicii's Bromance track.
Yeah.
So it became a bootleg, like a mashup. Yeah, again, I've got this thing about people sticking 2 tracks together. and then Tim's management took 50% publishing, which meant that we all had to divvy out
the other 50.
The other 50%, because he was such a big name, you know, he'd already been on the scene and that. And then that's how that happened. And that was, I mean, Tim never made that record. He obviously made the instrumental, but he never put the vocal on it. And also the people in Italy who we wrote the song with, they didn't put the vocal on it. It was just a random person who done it.
Really?
Got wind of it, and then they said, we love this, we want to sign it. And I was like, wow, that's how weird things happen like that in this industry.
That is crazy.
I know. Wow. Clearly, Amanda, the universe is coming up to meet you.
Oh, yeah, I do think that sometimes, because I think if you focus on the outcome too much, mm-hmm. you won't get results. But I sing songs all the time, and then I just forget about them. And if they do well, then great. And if they don't, they don't. It's out of your control, especially now, because you don't even have to do loads of like promotion or PR stuff now, because, you know, we don't have Top of the Pops or the Pepsi chart show or these big morning television. You know, you don't have to do all that now.
Yeah.
Just do like a couple of TikTok videos with some puppies running around.
There I come back to my, you know, and what is it that the record labels are doing these days? And my question to you is, do you think that record companies to some degree are obsolete these days?
Yeah, they are. But the only thing is, I think in terms of accounting and stuff like that, it's better to get somebody else to do it. Because if you've got, I've written with my producer called Steve, and we self-release it because we don't need a label.
Right.
Mm. Then I've got to account. I've got to get the money, collect the money, and then I've got to make sure that I divvy that money up between him. And then and sometimes when you're creative, you don't want to do all that shit.
No.
Because I'm no good at it anyway. So it's better for somebody else to do it. But then I do feel that, I mean, I've signed tracks to a lot of labels and they don't account.
Hello. So happy to hear another person. I mean, Linnell also echoed this as well. Mm-hmm. I am so sick of labels running away. I feel like they run away with the track. They give it the big, you know, woo in the beginning. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like, never hear from them again.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had that so many times.
And I'm like, really? And I just find it horribly disrespectful.
Yeah.
Very demeaning. Labels ultimately require we creators to have a product to sell. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why do they treat us so poorly? ?
Yeah. I mean, I could set up a label tomorrow though and take on a load of artists and then not pay them. I think it's almost like people have got the idea of having a label, but they don't understand the actual, you know, everything behind it. So there's too many labels that they're not proactive enough. That's the thing. You've got to find a label that you know has got a history. And the ones that don't account, I just don't work with them again. It's as simple as that, really. And that's another reason, obviously, why people do need a record label. And I think sometimes I do need a record label, because if you're dealing with 40 different labels, you've got to try and chase up the accounts for all of them. It's almost like we need some sort of, I have to tap every single record company up to pay me. It's exhausting.
Let's imagine that there was a central accounting platform, and just run yourself as a business, sign up to them, know they're going to collect for you.
That's it.
They take the tiniest percentage because that would be ethical. And they could just be your collection.
Yeah, it's a bit like neighbouring rights, isn't it? It's a bit like PRS, PPL, where, you know, because PPL are a really good collection society, but they might not go into every single nook and cranny, whereas if you go with another company, they'll go into territories direct and there'll be no double dipping, where they'll take 5%, and then when it gets to this side, they'll take 5%. You've got a company that goes in and collects from everywhere. You know, like really, really small territories.
And that would be phenomenal. And I think that perhaps the one thing they do rely on is the fact that people don't know information. Yeah. They don't know who, they just rely on these people to go and do it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because Audrey Gallagher came up with a really good point last week, and she said, you know, if the DJs, for example, this is an example because you're talking about PPL, if they actually were, it was mandatory to put their set lists in.
Yeah.
Mandatory.
Yeah.
We would get paid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They,
and I don't think they understand that by not doing that, which could take 15 minutes, we end up losing out on a lot of money. But those agencies are collecting.
So
where's that money?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. I know, obviously, you need a PRS license if you're going to play music in a...
Right.
You know, but as for PPO, as in play, like as in playing a DJ set list, I wasn't aware that they don't have to submit what they're playing.
It's not like the club would need to have
a license, wouldn't they, to actually play music?
Right. Well, that's what it should be. But yeah. Linnea's also a DJ, and she's had experience of this. And
I also have a label, by the way.
And she also has a label.
So I'm on all the sides, like a vocalist label.
I'm sure yours is lovely. Like, you won't slack them all off. I'm sure yours is not.
We're trying to see like what difference we can make. Obviously, like my label is just like pretty much like started, right? We don't have like the massive revenue maybe that Sony has yet, for example. Yeah. But let's say Sony or other labels, you know, they have the responsibility to help the artist a little bit more. Yeah, I do believe it. And I try to see, you know, with my label, what I can do and try to change that, you know, by having those conversations.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think it's treating artists as people as well, like, because I like to feel like I've got a team around me. You know, when you see sports and they all go round and they're like, right, you can do this. You know, yeah, no, I've got you covered. We need that in the music.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah. I think it was like that back in the day, you know.
Yeah, it's you're a product. And if you don't do what you're told, you can fuck off, basically. That is
Right.
No, I think the difference.
I'd rather do it on my own.
Mm. Yeah, the difference like between like before, back in the days, like, compared to now, is that artist basically has to sell themselves. They have to go out on social media, have to look good, dance a little bit in a little, you know, puppy video, A lot of people, they start to click likes, and that's great. And then the labels are like, oh, great, we see a great opportunity here to sell a lot. Instead of the label, you know, hearing a really great song, I think they're cherry picking a little bit. Like they do sign a lot of artists, but like looking at all the artists that they sign, they choose one or two or three to really push.
Yes.
But what happens to the rest of the artists?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That also deserves the love and attention and you know, the push.
Yeah, and that's exactly the same in publishing companies as well. You know, if someone's got a bigger artist, like if I'm going to go with a company that's got a load of A-list writers on it, then why am I going to be priority? Well, I'm clearly not, unless I get lucky. They're going to be the priority because they're earning them more money. So you can get lost. Yeah, I do believe you can get lost.
I think that's a really good point, actually.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we have gone off topic, but that's okay because I love this conversation. Like, this is a great conversation. Well, it's very educational for people. Some people listening out there might go, oh, I'm not really understanding everything that we're talking about, because we, you know, we understand the way that the system's set up. But for anyone listening who doesn't understand, please just write in or contact us and we'll, you know, help to explain what we're the terms that we're actually talking about.
Ask the questions that you always wondered about in the music industry, and we're happy to discuss in more detail.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
They might not know like PRS and PPO and they might not know what all that is. I know I certainly didn't when I started out. So
one of the things that I think is important to bring up is people listening out there, vocalists listening out there, writers listening out there, producers listening out there, there are so many revenue streams out there that you can be drawing from. And if you don't know what those revenue streams are, obviously it's going to be different territory to territory. Yeah. But if you don't know what they are, contact us and we will let you know all the different revenue streams. But we're going to be doing a topic on this on one of the podcasts quite soon.
Speaking about massive tunes, we have mentioned this song. You know, you collaborated with Tim Berg, also mm-hmm. known as Avicii, back in 2010. I think it was released.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was everywhere on the radio, the TV. You gave us a little story about, you know, how that came together. Mm-hmm. For me, it was probably the tune of the year when came out. Oh, and it's so catchy. Amazing. And in my opinion, it's the best song Avicii ever did.
Yay!
So,
yay!
So you mentioned a little bit how that came together. And I'm just curious, like, did you and Avicii ever meet up? And you know, you worked together in the music video, never met?
No, I wasn't in the music video. Neither was Tim, actually. And Ministry of Sound just got some stock people.
Really?
Okay. Put them in. So none of the artists were in the video. We wasn't asked, actually. It all happened so quickly. And also as well, though, I wasn't featured on the record, which was something I really heavily fought for, but didn't get anywhere because I had no representation at the time. Tim's management were quite hard to communicate with. So,
Can I just clear up? What do you mean by you weren't featured?
It wasn't Tim Berg featuring Amanda Wilson. It was just Tim Berg.
One of our listeners wrote in saying, "I find it inconvenient when I hear a singer alike on a song, but I cannot find them because they're not on the title or credited."
Yeah.
So I wonder sometimes if singers choose to remain off the title, but that seems really strange to me.
Yeah.
So that brings me to ask about Seek Bromance. So mm-hmm. your name was not on that song. So would you like to share like the story behind that? You mentioned a little bit like it was difficult working with the management.
It was quite difficult to work with the management because if I'm not represented at the time, I wasn't represented at the time. So I had no voice. I had no team around me to kind of say, you can't do this.
Right.
And Avicii at the time, before he became Avicii, obviously he was Tim Berg, and he was a brand, you know, and they were building the brand, and it was about him,
right?
Not so much having and a lot of his records, I think, didn't have featuring. It was just mm-hmm. Avicii. It wasn't Avicii featuring, unless it was somebody massive like Rita Ora. You know, I don't know. As time went on, I suppose people started to know who the artist was on the record. But for me, it was really frustrating because I felt like I was being cut out. And even from a PPL standpoint, actually, a featured artist gets paid more than a non-featured artist.
That's really, really good to share.
That's really important. Yeah. So if you want to be a featured artist, you will get paid more PPL.
Interesting. We used to have this conversation about featuring or putting "and" on instead of featuring.
Yes. Yeah.
We also have like some conversation about vocal buyout because that's a possibility.
Yes, it is.
But what I hear a lot of people are asking, and because it's been coming up also because I recently been on a track where my name was not included.
Okay.
And you know, they always come up with reasons. And first of all, I really enjoyed working with all of them. So it's just been a pleasure. But it comes from, in my opinion, it comes from the places like Spotify, for example. Spotify has a rule that you cannot be more than, I think, 3 people in a name in a song. So that means that you have to leave one out. Or one of, like, what is that? What is that? That needs to be changed, right? So that, for me, that was the case.
Tons of names on them, yeah. So I don't really, I don't know whether that is. Do you know if that's definitely a fact?
That is a fact, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
absolutely fine. Change this now.
We need that change. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
That's how you've got to rely on the labels to actually place it in the right genre. And because I've known labels to like release EDM tracks under soul, and I'm like, so that needs to make sure that it's in the right genre, and it also needs to make sure that obviously that everyone's credited. I mean, there's songs out there that I've done. My name's not even associated. It's featuring Amanda Wilson. When you look at the writing credits, I'm not written down.
So how did it make you feel when that happened?
It makes you feel like you're nothing, mm-hmm. even though you're such a massive right. part of the record. It yeah. just makes you feel, and there were so many people involved at that point, because we had the label in Italy, we had Ministry of Sound, it's been licensed to all these different record companies, and I do want to make people aware of this, actually, because I think it's really important. I didn't actually get paid for that record either.
Whoa!
So, wow. That pisses me off. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm really angry
that's
now.
The record that really, I woke up. Because I was, wow. I was before this record happened, I was quite blind in a sense of I didn't really understand the industry, and I still don't, because there's so many grey areas. But that track for me really opened my eyes to how much yeah. corruption and also as well. And I want to talk about this a little bit later when there's a question and answer things about what needs to be in the contract for an artist as well, because I think that's really important. But we don't have to cover that now.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I am so sad to hear that.
It breaks my heart, actually.
Yeah, it really, really does. And I think what's even sadder is the fact that you are so not alone, because, mm-hmm. You know, for the last 11 years, you know, doing this VSA and speaking to so many really high-level vocalists, high-level artists like yourself with big hits, and the stories are so similar.
They are, yeah,
and it's so sad, and I really, guys, girls, whomever's listening, I want this to stop. This needs to stop.
It does,
you know, it really, really does. So I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it really breaks my heart. Also,
no, but I'm sorry to hear it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, and I am too. You know, I spent years trying to move on from it. Almost resenting the record to a point.
Right.
But I've still made money through PRS, and I've still made money through doing PAs and gigs, and I've had so much enjoyment out of performing that record, and you know, and it's been great in so many ways, but there's still that bitter aftertaste of that's had like 104 million streams on YouTube, and it's been streamed millions and millions and millions of times. I can't tell you how many times that track has been streamed, and I have not been paid one cent of it.
That is horrific. I'm so upset. You know why? Also because I didn't know about Tim, to be honest, before I actually heard your voice.
Mm-hmm.
That really, I stopped in front of TV and I was like, wow, who is this? And I was like, who's this vocalist? I had to go to Google to find you. And I was like, why is her name not on that track? Like, what's going on here? And it breaks my heart hearing this story. It really does. I don't know if it's too late to go back and even have the discussions, if it's even worth it.
You have a 6-year cutoff to get your royalties, and I think most of the majority of the record would have been made in the first 6 years.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still earn money now. I'd still earn money from it. But the thing is as well, I'd need a lawyer, and I tried to get a lawyer, but it just went up to like £800. I thought I can't afford that. I can't cough up this money. And cause I don't know. And they know this though. They know.
They used the opportunity. No. Oh yeah.
So if anyone wants to represent me for free on a no-win, do you remember no-win, no-win basis?
Yes, no-win, no-fee.
No one does that anymore.
Yeah.
I'm
meant to get paid this money, I will. And if I'm not, then I'm not good. And I must say, the neighbouring rights company that I use in the UK are really, really good. Their systems are so transparent that you know what's done what in what territory. They account 4 times a year. They're on the dot. They're really, really good company. I'm thankful that I actually came across.
What's the name of the company? Are you willing to share?
Lime Bloom Music.
Lime Bloom. Okay. Yeah, music, so there you go. There's another tip for everybody listening out there.
Yeah. Good. Also, well, you don't need to ring them up and go, yeah, just to let you know, I've just done this record and it's featuring. They've got like a system where it just picks it up.
Wow.
Yeah. So I go on the pro and I go, oh, they've added Crush, because I'd done the cover of Crush a few months ago. And I didn't even have to tell them, because it must know. So I like things where I don't have to do anything. And then they just do it all for me. So that's
a good company then. Sure. Just want to put out a warning to all vocalists, songwriters out there that are in this music industry. We know you are super excited to release your music. Mm-hmm. And for example, in your case, Amanda, they found your vocal, put it on, it became a major hit. It can happen.
Yeah.
Make sure that even if you work with like you have a great relationship, always make sure that you are covered with a contract. Doesn't matter if you're best friends or if you don't even know them. Mm-hmm. Never give away your work. This is what can happen. This is heartbreaking to hear. This is a big warning sign. Really, it really is.
Yeah.
And it's been happening too many times. I cannot have that happen one more time. I really can't.
She's mother bear there.
She's yeah.
yeah. There's 50 Feet from Stardom. That film, 50 Feet. Is it 50 Feet? Yeah. 20 Feet from Stardom. It was happening back then as well.
Yeah. I had similar back in the days. I was working, I'm not going to give names, but I was working with somebody and the song really hit off. Great. Yeah. The label said, we will offer you 1% because that's industry standards. And I'm like, hold on. I wrote the melody on the piano. I wrote the lyrics. I'm singing the lyrics. Mm. No, this is not okay. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I have a brother who's in the music industry as well. And he knows, like he knew a little bit more about contracts back then. So
yeah,
I went to him and he's like, hold up. No. I had to fight, fight, and became like a huge thing for 15%.
Yeah.
And I'm still getting upset today when I get my royalties and I see that I'm only getting 50% when that other person is getting the rest.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I know that both of us did just as much work. Yeah. We really did. Should be 50-50 in my opinion.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
So don't say yes to industry standards. Come and talk with us. If you have problems with your contract, come and talk with us. Are you unsure if it feels okay or not? Come and talk with us. We will help you.
But sometimes when you've got a label that's coming up to you and you're in your teens or something, you're like, oh my God, they want to sign. Oh my God, that's so amazing.
Yes. You know, you get super excited
about all that stuff. Yeah. You know, but you definitely need to because otherwise you just end up with selling your soul to the devil, basically.
Yeah.
I think that's really well said. And, you know, and I don't mind sharing a tiny little story. But when I was just starting out, I ended up, again, fell into working with a really well-known garage producer. And just the stuff we did just took off. And and all of a sudden there was a guy who turns up in the studio and he's like waving this piece of paper in front of me. And I like, no, nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm like terribly excited because Radio One's playing it. And I'm like going, holy shit, this is amazing, you know? And he said, oh yeah, I've got this. And he wouldn't even tell me what it was. It's just a contract that, because we're doing like Radio One and blah, 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 blah. So me like an idiot.
Oh no.
I said, this gets worse, right? Yeah. So this guy was a sub publisher. The publishing house he was with wasn't even a very good publishing house.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't even know the difference between a publishing contract and you know an actual just signing a record. Yeah, I didn't know the difference. And so I signed it. Next thing, I've got Capital Radio picked up on it. And next thing I had a Telstar contacted me and they wanted to sign me. But they went, oh, what about publishing and what about deals? I'd already signed this stupid piece.
Oh, no. Yeah.
It was horrendous.
Yeah.
But fortunately, they liked the track so much, they kind of sorted it all out for me.
Okay.
Lucky.
But I lost my publishing on it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, it was terrible. And this is the sort of garbage that I really want young vocalists and writers to hear and understand, because there is, as you've just correctly said, there's that excitement about, because you want to make it, don't you? You want to be out there.
Yeah.
And that's the moment, guys and girls, you need to hit the brakes real hard.
Yeah.
And you can contact us, or, you know, but make sure, go to a lawyer and make sure that you don't do anything without
also, intuition as well. Like, if someone's waving a bit of paper and you're like, oh, I'm excited, but it's a bit, you know, go with it. Because I think intuition wise, I ignored so many things I thought was wrong. Like, I was told, you know, you got to look a certain way, you got to lose weight, you got to do this, you got to do that. And I thought, who the fuck are you? Like, no offense, but if you looked in at yourself, you know, like, it's just, honestly, I just, from when I was young, like, yeah, it was just like, you were just this, you weren't a person, you wasn't a person at all.
No.
Somebody that I worked with many, many years ago, who kind of treated me like a product. He was a friend, but he kind of treated me like a product as well. And we wrote songs together. And I said, and he used to tell me sometimes, oh, you need to lose weight, you need to do this and that. And he's got kids now, he's got a daughter. I said, how would you like it?
Mm-hmm.
If someone said that to your daughter, he goes, right. No, I get it. He totally regrets doing it now because he's almost become part of the system, you know. And he went, no, I get it. You know, I get that I was wrong and that was so wrong. It's like, you know, so he sees it now, but no. Too many people are still doing it.
Well, this is it. And I remember sitting next to the head of Telstar at the time, and we're having a little drink around, just, we just signed contracts and stuff. And he turned around to me and he said, oh, we're really happy to have you, Antonia, but we think maybe you could lose a little bit of weight.
Yeah.
I'll tell you,
Jesus. I was so embarrassed, okay? And I went crazy because they were doing like lots of photo shoots and stuff. And I went crazy and I went and got a trainer and everything. And I couldn't afford any of that, by the way. I mean, but I had to do it. And I remember now looking back and seeing the photographs that were taken before I got the trainer.
Yeah.
And I was thin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what I mean. It's almost like it's a control thing.
Yeah.
Like, we're doing you a favor and we just want to let you know you're not quite good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You're not quite good enough. So, you know, dancing around a few, because we've got to feel like we're doing something, you know. I think it's, but it happens to so many artists. I mean, when you think of Hearsay, that, you know, that some of them were told to lose weight, and I think everyone has been told. I mean, I like to think that's changed a bit now. There's a few artists that have come through that are just well known for their music and not their actual looks.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're still in a very sort of perfection filtered.
Social media makes you think everybody's so beautiful.
I know,
and everybody
yeah.
has big butts and I don't know what. Yeah. And it's just, it's not healthy. It's definitely not healthy. You know, I stopped caring about what people think, you know.
Yeah.
I am who I am. Yeah. I look who I look, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, I will go up in weight, I will go down, who knows.
Yeah,
you know?
We're human but at the end of the day.
It is, so, it's me, you know. Get me. If you like my music, listen to it, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think that's a nice kind of segue into mental health, because you know, I'm a psychotherapist, so I BACP or UKCP?
Yeah, I'm BACP.
BACP as well.
Yeah.
So on that particular topic, it's really close to my heart, because I have, you know, worked with a lot of people who have real identity issues.
Yeah.
Really low self-esteem based on what people have told them, and it's got really stuck and imprinted. Mm-hmm. And especially in the music industry, as you've said, you know, it's an industry where, you know, the way you look is part of the product, isn't it? And the amount of people that I've spoken to that have, it's really destroyed them.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, it's a machine. This industry is a machine. It's not kind. A lot of it's not kind.
Yeah.
They don't treat people kindly. No.
Nope. They do not.
I've always felt like it's a bit like a square peg round hole thing for me, because I don't have the ego to match the success that I want or have, because I don't want to. It's not that I don't want to be at the forefront, but I don't want the bullshit that comes with it. I just want to release music and people to enjoy it.
Yeah,
but I have to play the Instagram, TikTok. I have to try to self-promote. I hate it, honestly. I really do.
Yeah. Mm. Well, this is another point where, you know, a lot of people don't do it because they don't feel good enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they just not like bother doing it because they see through it, you know? Mm-hmm. And yes, there is, like, looking at the music industry, if you have like the quality shots and quality video, somebody's following you and with every perfect shot and you look amazing and whatever. Yeah, people will put a like to that because it creates this fantasy vision, right? That, oh, that's so great. It's just like nice for the eye or whatever. Yeah. But it's really unhealthy. It's not good. And, you know, support the music.
Yeah.
Like, you come to listen to the music and whatever comes with it is just there, you know. And
I never knew anything about any of the artists growing up. I just knew the song.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I never knew who Alison Moyet was. I never knew who Kapow was. I never knew who any of those people were. Level 42. I never knew. I just used to listen to the record. I love this record. I don't care who they were. It didn't make any difference to me.
Yeah. Absolutely. I will maybe admit that, like, I have to put myself in that kind of position that try to take a nice picture now and then to make sure, you know, people are following, know me and whatever. But it's really exhausting. I just want them to like my music and be a part of the musical journey.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, the reality is that you have to promote yourself also, and it comes good and bad with that.
You've got to be great with lighting, great with video editing.
Oh, yeah.
Great with technology in general. I'm like, right, this is not my remit. I'm completely uncomfortable with that. A lot of my videos as well that I put up, I'm usually taking the piss out of myself in some sort of way because I think it's a big laugh.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't edit videos or anything. If I make a fuck up, it just goes on just as it is. But that's, I think, if you're that kind of person, people will like you more because people want to be able to relate to you. I think that's really important, you know. So, and those who don't like you, then that's fine too, you know. So
exactly.
Well, you're not gonna please all of the people all of the time. No. And that is
definitely not. Just don't call me an arsehole in the comments. Like, you don't need to do that. You can think I'm an arsehole, but don't say it. You know, because we're all entitled to our own opinions, aren't we? And there's some people loving, you're an arsehole, but don't write it on their Facebook page or their social media, because that's just rude and it's cruel. It's unnecessary.
I agree.
That. I've had a few of those. Can you tell?
Oh, well, we all have, you know.
again, I could sit all night and talk about the psychology of the people that feel the need to do that.
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
Yeah.
Get a life. Get a life.
But they say hurt people hurt people.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is also that you can, I think I brought it up in one of our episodes before, but the thing is you can get like 100 really nice comments on your song, right? But then there's this one person that says that you're an asshole or whatever it could be. Something really rude. And it really, it's like a knife in your heart. And you only focus on that one person.
Yeah.
And I think they know it. And they're just, I don't know. It's just, oh my God.
I mean, I don't read comments anymore, personally. I mean, I don't get too many. I had a couple on my Facebook that were a bit weird recently. And then I had a couple on Instagram. I don't get many, thankfully, even though my Facebook and my Instagram are open to anyone to have a look at. Yeah. I don't really read the comments, and I was actually thinking about turning comments off, because I don't feel like I need to hear what people think. But then sometimes, you know, it's nice for people to comment because they can learn from each other, not just from me, but like, you know, they go off on tangents. Oh, you know, where'd you get your t-shirt from? Or it could be anything completely pointless, you know, but it's just like, just stuff like that. Or, you know, where can I don't know, because some people can't find certain records that I'm on now. And it'd just be nice for people to comment. But then there is always that one or two that just ruin it, doesn't it? They just, yeah, they can't help themselves. They can't help themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, what brought you to be a counsellor?
Well, I had a bit of a midlife crisis, I suppose. I sort of started doing introduction to counselling because I was always interested. I've been in therapy since like mid-20s. So I've always found that therapy has always been really, really
helpful,
beneficial.
Yeah.
So, okay. And then in 2013, I decided to start training to be a counsellor, and then I qualified in 2017. I haven't actually gone on to do any counselling since then, but I must say I had like a bit of a midlife crisis, and then I've sort of rebuilt myself from the bottom back up again. I suppose I had my son, I had postnatal depression, I'd lost my identity. Am I a singer? Am I a mum? How do I do this? And then my marriage broke down as well, so a lot happened in such a short time.
Wow.
Yeah, so then, and from then on, I just started to become awake. You know, I just started to realize that I hold the power to my own change. No one else.
Right.
I kind of changed from that victim mentality to, oh my God, I'm here where I am because of me, and only I can change that. And then I sought after that play therapy, which I do think is life altering, because it's dealing with the subconscious mind rather than the conscious, which is in normal talking therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And then since then, I've gone from being somebody who's heavily suffered with quite big anxiety on stage, preferably like mostly. And then I've kind of learned to kind of just accept myself more, really.
Do you know how much courage it takes to just accept yourself?
Yeah.
Loads.
It's a big deal, because it means you're having to face every demon, every fear head on, and just be okay with it.
Yeah, and especially in the music industry as well, because, you know, growing up, you know, I didn't always have my needs met as a child. So, and that was, as I grew up, it was always reinforced. I'd always be working with people that didn't quite see my worth. Same with relationships, you know. So it kind of bleeds into your adult life. If you don't address it, it becomes such a massive issue. You do need to address it if you keep having the same problem, you know.
And you know, with that in mind, if you kind of think about a type of person, and I've said this before in another podcast, but the type of person that actually becomes a vocalist, a writer, it's come so much from the soul. There's so much sensitivity there. We are very sensitive beings. And often it's because of those sort of childhood traumas, if you will, that kind of, that's where a lot of our kind of stuff comes from. And then here we are out in the music industry putting our whole soul on the line, and to people to judge us. And whoever's listening, you have no idea how courageous that is. to do that, you know. So
our songwriting is like therapy sessions.
It is.
That comes out in that session that you're writing that song is either something in the past, something that's happening now, or something that may happen in the future. It could be like a manifested. It's all music's almost like a manifesting thing as well. Because, you know, if you're putting feeling into it, and that's when you put feeling into something, you get the result.
Right.
So it is like therapy.
Yes, it is like therapy. I don't know if, and I'm going to ask both of you this question. So sometimes when I've been writing a song, because I think I've said this before, you know, I literally, I get the backing track in and I don't listen to it. I go and I go straight to record, hit record, mm-hmm. and off I go. And we've said this before, you know, there's mumblings going on, right? But but sometimes I, and this is fairly often, I have a moment where I get completely lost in the music, or I get lost inside myself, mm-hmm. and I can feel almost like vibrations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And almost like sometimes the energy, and so I don't want to sound all magical thinking here, but yeah. but the energy and even the ideas all just start to flow in on their own. And that to me is almost like you're riding on a wave. And is therapeutic. Because
it's almost like it's about the process, not the outcome.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you focus on the process and you just enjoy the process, that's why people find that people that have trouble in life, I know for me, it's because I'm resisting everything. I'm like, oh, but I don't want it to go that way. But but how do I control that? It's about controlling everything. Right. Whereas if you just let it be and just let it happen, it will happen. I'm holding on.
Well, this is it. But I think that's also because, you know, that's external kind of pressure, because the expectation that, oh, you're going to finish a track, oh, you're going to finish it by this time, oh, it's going to sound like this, oh, it's not going to sound like that, because I don't want it to sound like that, and all this remit that's kind of chucked at you.
I think as well, like, you know, like some people might say, right, well, we're looking for a vocal, but we want it to be powerful, we want it to be like emotional, and I'm like, I'll do that. And then they're like, right, we want it to be about this and we want it to be about that, and I'm like, listen, if you want me to write the song, just let me write it. If you've got any problems after,
I agree,
because if I go in writing this song and I think, right, well, I've got to do that and I've got to do that, I'll fuck it up.
Yeah,
because I'm not doing what I do naturally. I'm being told what to do, and I just think people just have to either go along and like what I do, or find someone else.
I totally agree on this. It's so hard when somebody's like, oh, it has to be about this and that.
Yeah.
And instead of just giving me the song, let me do my thing, and then let's see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
Best outcomes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It has to come naturally.
Yeah. Absolutely. I take ownership of this. I absolutely am shit when it comes to pressure. If I have pressure and I know something's got to be done by a certain time, I switch right off.
I don't like that either. I
can't stand it.
Because you can't always be creative either. Like there's some days I just think, bollocks to it, I'm not going to be creative today. I can't be. You've got to want to do it. If you try and sit down and do it when you don't want to do it, you're like, it's just like, I call it mental constipation. You're just like, you can't get any lyrics
out.
I
love that mental constipation. My God, I'm going to use that. That's great.
Because you're trying to think of something. You're like, why can't I be? But just don't be creative that day. And then when you do what you want to do, then the creative stuff comes, you know, further down the line, you know.
I agree.
The time restraint is what actually makes that harder, because like people are wanting it next week and you're like, well, I've literally got no idea what I'm gonna do.
I'll tell you,
confessions time. I have let so many huge opportunities pass me by because I didn't want the pressure. And also at times I didn't have the confidence to push forward. And I don't regret it when I look back, but I kind of think to myself, you know, I wish I was who I am now. And I wonder how that might have played out differently, you know. But
there may be those opportunities. If they had happened, you may not have had that epiphany where you could start to control what you let in your life. So I think sometimes things not happening, even though they seem like it's an opportunity missed, actually is an opportunity for growth within yourself before other people come into the picture.
I can see that, and I think that's certainly important to take on board.
You know, being in the music industry, it's kind of being in a little bubble, you know. It's a completely different life than maybe somebody's just going to work or whatever. It's really like, you have to pay attention and like work really hard, and awkward hours, you fly away suddenly, in your inbox, there's a request that you have to, you know, do a vocal, you know, thing at maybe 10 in the night, and yes, you have be like running around like a chicken, crazy, like stressed out chicken. And like maybe the other family members are not like on the same level. They might not understand what's going on, and they might be stressed out because they see you stressing around, you know. Yeah. And so how do you deal with like keeping the music industry and your private life kind of together? How do you explain to your family, mm-hmm, like how do you match it all together and make it work?
Well, I mainly do recording when my son's at school. I do record at 10 o'clock at night. I don't actually recommend doing recording at 10 o'clock at night because I'm so knackered at that point. I just think, I just want to sit and watch shit on TV. That's all I want to do. I guess everything that I've learned over the years about balance and about saying, not being afraid of saying no to people, mm-hmm, and going with that feeling like, when someone sends me something and I think, oh, I'm not really sure about that, mm, I just think, don't do it then. So I just say no to it. So I only say yes to the things that I really, really love doing. And I make sure that I just keep myself grounded. I like peace. I like puzzles. You're going to think this is crazy. I often, if I'm stuck on something or my brain is just, won't shut up, mm, I've got 1,000 piece puzzle. I'll show you, but this is literally, it's going to fall over in a minute. I've got to get a new one. It's hanging on by a thread, that light, honestly. But I've got 1,000 piece puzzle. And when my brain is just overworked, I just go to that and I just do it. And all I think about is the puzzle. It's about just finding a balance, really, between real life and, because music industry, I don't think is real life. Mm. I think it's
a bubble. Yeah, I would say a bubble.
it's not real life.
But you mentioned before, like you had a job, right? And you went from having a normal job to suddenly, you know, flying off, doing music videos, things like that.
Yeah.
How did that, like, did your family and the loved ones around you adjust with that, or was that hard to explain that you're going into this world now?
It was actually, my mum loved it. I mean, she's no longer here.
She used to go with you, right?
Yeah, she used to go with me everywhere. She used to absolutely love it. And I was 25 then, so I had no children. I was just being able to flit off for a week here or there and do whatever. So my friends adapted quite well because they'd get a lot of free drinks and they might go to America every now and then, and they'd get all these free trips. Who wants to come Poland? Oh, me, you, who wants to come America? So, like, that was really nice. And my husband at the time as well, he used to go everywhere with me. Mm. So we adapted really easily because we didn't have children. If you asked me to do that now, I'd have to say no to it because my son's my main focus, and if I could gig in the odd weekend and stuff like that, I would do. But I kind of feel like that sort of gigging part of my life is not over, but it's not a priority anymore. Mm-hmm. For me, it's about being creative in the studio and then releasing it to the world.
And on that topic, again, another little share.
Yep.
I'm sharing a lot today, and I don't know. So you were saying you came quite late to the party, and you said that earlier on, and I came really late to the party because I'd been singing like similarly, doing stuff and bands and stuff like that, and didn't get really fully signed until I was, I think, just 32. I had three children.
Oh, wow.
And I was a single mom.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that was pretty wild. And you know, that dilemma, because back then, you know, it was not cool to be a mom, right? You had to be single.
Yeah,
and it wasn't cool to be in your 30s either. There was this big label on it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, it's not that way today, thank God. Yeah. But But back then it was such a thing. So fortunately I looked a lot younger than my years. But for me, and please don't judge me. But you know, because I was part of the machine, I had to keep silent about having three children.
Oh, yeah. I can understand why you had to do that. Yeah.
And I had to keep silent about it. But I did what you're doing now, and that is I then moved my whole setup, built my studio at home, tried to make sure that I ended up doing stuff, and which is why I stopped gigging, stopped doing stuff like that, because I thought I could just be studio based and still do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you can.
And I did that really successfully. Yeah. But not a lot of people knew that I had three children.
Yeah.
So it was just crazy.
That must have been hard, because it's almost like you've got two lives, really, ain't you? You've got this life where you're
100%. And I'll tell you, one of my most wonderful memories was I was doing a gig in Wales, and I had just managed to out the fact that I had children to the label. And I said, can I bring them with me? I brought the two oldest, actually, and they got their backstage passes, and we had who did we have? E17. And all of these really big acts were on, and they got to hang out with everybody and it was the best day of their life.
These
are just kind of nice memories that I have with that. What a great idea. That's what he did.
I suppose you have to see it, like, as in visualize it, what it would be, because it is they're two very different jobs, being a parent and trying to be in the music industry, trying to fit both in. And that can be really hard to do. That's when you have to learn how to say no to people. And I think as well, if you're like a bigger artist, you need to have a really strong sense of self, because you'll get lost otherwise.
Yeah.
100%.
I totally agree.
If you're people pleasing, you're fucked, honestly, because you'll just say yes to everything.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you're like stressed out. Yeah, it's no life. You really need to know who you are, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, comes with age and therapy.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely was in the people pleasing category, without a doubt.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm the same. I'm very much like that, sadly. Yeah. But I do get moments, light bulb moments, where I realize, like, oh wow, I need to take a step back here for a second, you know.
Yeah.
Back to reality for a second and actually say no to something, which I hate saying no, because I'm super excited about everything.
I don't like saying no, because I feel bad for them, but
isn't
that amazing? We do this and we're trying to protect them and rescue them.
No, that's the thing, like, you're just like, all right, then I'll do it for you. And you already go, what are you doing? Say no, say no.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh.
You need to learn to say no more.
Yeah. But actually, Linnea, I swear to God, you astonish me sometimes, because, you know, one minute you might be a bit people pleasy, as you've said. And then all of a sudden it's like, you go, woof. And there's this massive boundary that you've just put
down. I'm like, too far.
Wow. Yeah.
That's great. Sounds great.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry.
Hidden in me somewhere.
Yeah. If you're all okay, we're just going to like move on to a slightly more upbeat topic. If you're okay. Imagine you're trapped in a karaoke room for 24 hours.
Okay.
And can only sing one song on repeat.
Yeah.
Okay. What song would you choose?
Something easy. There'll be no Mariah Carey or Whitney or anything like that. I'll be fucked after singing that. God, could you imagine? It'd have to be like, oh my God, what could it be? It has to be something fun everyone can dance to, like a Madonna song or something, like
right.
Imperial Girl or Like a Virgin or something.
Like a Virgin for 24 hours. Wow.
Yeah. But that's what I do at karaoke. I don't get up on karaoke and give everyone what they think that I'm going to. I get up and sing. My sister sang Move Closer last time we did karaoke, and I sang Like a Virgin. I didn't voice it. I don't want to get up and go, hi, everybody. Because I don't take myself seriously. As in, that would be Like a Virgin on repeat for 24 hours. Wine's got to be included. For free, preferably, but yeah, and food. Yeah, what more could you want? Yeah.
Are there any particular songs in your discography that hold a special significance for you?
I would say Spin It Again. Probably, I didn't write that song, but I really love it. I've always loved it. I think it shows me off vocally. Watching as well with Freemasons, that's always been a song that's, I think, is a classic house track. I've always loved. There's quite a few tracks actually, but a lot of people have not heard of them. They're all on my Spotify. The tracks that have done really well are the Freemasons ones and the Avicii one. And the others have done well because of, when you go onto the Amanda Wilson Spotify, you can just see them and you can... Sure. Through the ones you want. So, but those, the top four ones, which was Disco's Revenge as well, are the ones that have done the best, I suppose. Yeah. But there's loads of stuff that I've done with Universal Library Music that is on Spotify as well.
Yeah.
They're all there.
So we got to say this then. So those who are listening to this, I want you to go to Amanda's Spotify and listen to those tracks right now.
Okay.
Would you be willing to sing us a little snippet?
Okay, what would you like me to sing?
You choose.
All right, I'll sing a bit of Sikh Bromance, seeing as everyone knows that one.
All right, cool.
Okay, I'll sing a first verse and a chorus.
All right.
Yes. Okay. So excited.
All right, okay. I've been watching you, you've been hurting too. You give all your love, nothing left to show. I have been there too, alone in my despair, watching life go by, no one who to share. Boy, you got it bad, but I got something good. I will treat you good in every way, yeah. You will never feel alone. My touch is such a rush, it all flows. I will give to you the love you seek and more. So what are you waiting for? I will give to you the love you seek and more. Oh God, I did that. I ran out of breath.
That's all right. That's amazing.
Oh my God. I get goosebumps. Thank you. Seriously.
Wow. Wow.
How big fan I was, you know, when I came out. Like, you have no idea. I'm getting a private concert here. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like,
you're allowed to run out of breath.
It's like me watching
backing vocals as well as the lead vocal as well. When I try and do the backing vocals and the lead, I'm like,
yeah. That was amazing. I'm so happy. I will sleep like an angel today knowing that you sang to me.
there you go.
Thank you so much.
She's a super fan, by the way.
Yeah. Your vocals, like, holy shit, really goes like all over the place, and you're like, what?
They're so amazing. Oh my God.
Yeah, okay, Amanda, we noticed that you have released 4 tracks already this year.
It's on Spotify,
at least.
Yeah.
And we're so happy. You graced us with your amazing voice and you keep doing that. And I want to hear more from you, obviously. So what's next from you? Is there anything you'd like to share with us and your fans?
Okay. So I have an album that I'm working on at the moment. It's not dance music, guys. I'm afraid it's not. It's different. It's 80s synth, but with a current feel. So think like 1975 meets kind of.
Wow.
Yeah, like there's some really good 80s bands that are doing really current feel, but with a nod to the 80s. So I will be doing, I'm on track number, we're about to start track number 6. So I'm going to do 10 tracks.
Amazing.
And then we don't know what we're going to do. We've obviously not approached any labels yet. I don't know if that's what's going to happen. I'm not even going to think about it yet.
Okay.
But as long as it's out there and people can listen to it, then I'm happy. And I get paid, obviously.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Love it.
Great.
Yeah,
well,
it's a different avenue for me. It's not quite P&O Fairies yet, but that's later. But, you know, I will definitely enjoy. I love the 80s era anyway. So I love it.
Love it. Your voice can do anything. So I'm sure it's going to be incredible. I can't wait to hear it.
Great. Thank you. Next year, probably now, though.
Yeah, take some time to record and the whole shebang. So next year, I'll keep a look out for the new album.
Oh, thank you.
So I want to thank you, Amanda, for taking the time today to share your thoughts and your feelings. Yeah. And you were so candid. And so I want to thank you for another fantastic episode of Love Vocals Nation. We want to extend a massive thank you to our special guest, the incredible Amanda Wilson. Thank you so much. You've been amazing.
Thank you.
for joining us today and gracing our podcast with her infectious energy and undeniable talent. Oh, it's been an absolute blast having her on the show. And we hope you all enjoyed this episode as much as we did. Remember to stay connected with Amanda on her social media platform, because you never know the amazing musical adventures that she's going to embark on next, like her 80s stuff that's coming out. It's going to be amazing. Remember, Love Vocals is more than just a podcast. It's a movement for positive change for vocalists and songwriters in the music industry. So support us in this vital change. So keep tuning in.
See you next time.
Yeah. As Linnea said, stay hydrated. Keep grooving.
Keep grooving. Stay hydrated. See you next week.
Love of music.